We have seen, under the energetic direction of C.K. Blanton, Itasca Paper Company refurbishment and new equipment and an impressive increase in production figures. But a nasty problem remains. While the whole concept of the mill had been based on the water power provided by the Mississippi River, the undermining of the flow, often reducing it drastically because of the Corps of Engineers dam system, had undercut and done serious harm to the mill prospects. And now those problems are in the hands of Blanton. The undependable flow of the Mississippi River at Grand Rapids had it so frustrated the Kaukauna owners of the mill continued to be a major concern to the new management. Reduced water volume sometimes prevented operation of the pocket grinders at full capacity, and pulp purchased elsewhere doubled the raw material cost for newsprint. Low water seriously impaired the cost efficiency of paper production in Grand Rapids. In 1917, the plant purchased 400 tons of pulp, and the amount increased dramatically in 1918. That year, the summer was dry, and river flowage at Grand Rapids dropped sharply and decreased even further in the fall. For extended periods, only two pocket grinders had sufficient power to operate. Pulp from Canada had to be shipped to Duluth by boat and then by rail to Grand Rapids. The mill needed so much pulp that Andrews traveled through Wisconsin and Michigan seeking additional sources. That year, he purchased about 2,000 tons at a cost of close to $100,000. In the spring of 1919, the Herald Review reported that the Itasca Paper Company was still buying a large share of its needed pulp. Furthermore, for a time, the company was almost totally dependent on the coal and wood-fired boilers for power. The new water wheel stood idle for a large part of the time that spring. Controversy in regard to the policies followed by the Corps of Engineers management of the federal dams remained widespread in the region, and tempers frequently flared. The Corps still maintained water levels behind the dams to benefit interests downstream, keeping the reservoirs full unless water was required elsewhere for navigation. Thus, water in the river at Grand Rapids was often reduced to little more than a trickle. At the same time, settlers behind the dams expressed their resentment as their land and crops were inundated. For local residents, land that had once seen only Indians, hunters, trappers, and lumbermen now served more important interests. That seemed to escape the attention of the Army engineers. One fall, when the major in charge of the dams announced that haylands would not be flooded that season, only indignation was aroused. The Independent commented, "The letter carries a tone of, it won't be flooded because we don't need to flood it, and if we needed it, we'd flood it regardless of the need to pay to save the stock of northern Minnesota." In 1919, Charles Blanton began work on an imaginative, if only partial, solution to the dilemma faced by the paper company. At the time the mill had been purchased in 1916, the Grand Rapids Water Power and Boom Company had also changed hands. The first president of that company was Dan Gunn, and then was Frank Becker in Kaukauna, and now the third president of the small, locally formed corporation was George Thompson. And we have to just kind of consider that for a moment. Here is George Thompson, graduate of Oxford, erudite individual, member of exclusive men's clubs on two continents, distinguished journalist, and here he is now, the president of the rather awkwardly named Grand Rapids Water Power and Boom Company. But with him as president, it now begins to fulfill a new role. In October of 1919, the new St. Paul owners approved a major alteration in the Articles of Incorporation of the Grand Rapids Water Power and Boom Company. The corporation had served its original purpose, and the name was now changed to the Prairie River Power Company. Its new purpose was to construct, acquire, maintain, and operate dams on the Prairie River, which flows just east of Grand Rapids and joins the Mississippi. The dams were meant to supply power for developing and generating electricity. The company set its limit of indebtedness at $500,000 and passed a resolution to borrow all money necessary for the construction of a dam and power plant. The next month, the directors of the corporation approved a request from Blandin to borrow $200,000 for starters. To expedite the condemnation of affected lands and to aid in obtaining federal approval for the construction of a dam, the Prairie River Power Company would also furnish power to the public of Itasca County. But in Blandin's mind, that purpose was minor. His main interest lay in securing additional water power generated electricity for the Itasca Paper Company. The new plant would transmit enough power to Grand Rapids to operate two pocket grinders around the clock, making possible the local production of a much larger share of the mill's pulp. Plans called for a dam 700 feet long, about 3 miles east of Grand Rapids at a small falls in the river just below Prairie Lake. The area had been carefully surveyed, and no major damage to agricultural land was foreseen. When the Corps of Engineers objected to the project on the grounds that the dam would interfere with navigation, the Grand Rapids City Council, fully supporting the endeavor, pointed out that the river never had been navigable. The Corps, after further consideration, approved construction, and Blandin immediately called for bids, hoping that both the dam and the power plant could be ready within 3 months. The company placed J.C. Jacobson, he's the one who had designed the original mill, in charge of its new venture. A camp to accommodate 100 workers was quickly erected at the site. A reporter from the Herald Review described it as a model place, like a little village, even boasting electric lights along the pathways between buildings. The kitchen offered fare, the paper said, the equal of that found in most first-class hotels. The pay was good at $5.50 per day, and an added Blandin touch was to provide a daily bundle of newspapers for the employees. The camp was filled to capacity in November as work began with a fleet of trucks and teams hauling cement and materials to the dam site. Construction was well underway when in February, several property owners contended that the price offered for their soon-to-be-inundated land was not high enough. When they attempted to use the court system to halt work on the expensive project, Blandin called on W.H. Oppenheimer, his St. Paul attorney and friend, to represent the Prairie River Power Company. Oppenheimer pointed out to the court that the Prairie River Power Company had signed an agreement with the Minnesota Utilities Company to supply it with all of the power generated at the site in emergencies. He also stated that the dam would have a major economic impact on the area because locally cut pulpwood would be required to feed the electrically driven pocket grinders. The Grand Rapids business community fully supported Oppenheimer's case, and the judge ruled that the Prairie River Power Company qualified as a public service corporation. Court-appointed appraisers then set a value on the contested lands, and the owners had no choice but to accept the prices set. Work at the dam site had not been delayed. The original plan for completion in 3 months did not prove feasible, and work on the project continued through spring and early summer. When the dam was finished, machinery was installed capable of generating 1,500 horsepower and expected to average an output of 1,000 horsepower. By comparison, the power dam in Grand Rapids could generate 2,000 horsepower when flowage flowed. So that obviously is a significant amount at Prairie River. By the end of June 1920, the project was about finished. In July, the dam gates were closed and the new reservoir began to fill. At the end of July, the Prairie River Power Company generated its first power and turned that over to the Minnesota Utilities Company while one of its plants was being overhauled. Meanwhile, final arrangements and adjustments to transfer power to Grand Rapids were completed. They had a very skilled and very strong background electrician from Minneapolis to oversee that. But the accomplishment was certainly marred when the power was turned on and that electrician electrocuted himself. It was just such a shock and so unexpected. But nonetheless, the power flowed and it was there, and the massive project was finished, assuring the power to grind an additional supply of pulpwood. Another major innovation added to the mill's pulp supply soon after the completion of the Prairie River Dam. In 1921, a pulp mill served by a crew of 38 employees was erected by the Itasca Paper Company downstream at Little Falls. Water power generated there provided electricity that could be purchased at reasonable rates, making feasible the installation of a new 1,000-horsepower motor to power two additional pocket grinders. A crew of experienced mechanics, carpenters, and painters arrived from the Grand Rapids plant to put the place in order and carry out the plans prepared by Jacobson. The press noted that the new facility was as clean and orderly as the paper mill in Grand Rapids. Blandin's undertaking did not completely solve the river problem, but it considerably lessened its impact. Next time, labor unions are going to present another major challenge to Blandin.